This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Jensen, got a lot to get to here in this hour. A lot of basketball talk we're going to have. Obviously, what we saw last night in the pivotal game five at OKC, what we might see in game number six. But there's also a lot of movement here since our discussion yesterday in the WNBA. Six games on the slate tonight. And we wanted to bring back to the program Kate Constable. Give her a follow on X as I do at that same handle. Kate Constable does a great job at the Better Angle and joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Kate, great to have you back on this day. And I know Jensen's already fired away from yesterday's show. And then today, you know, normally you see a point move here and there. I mean, we're seeing 4-5 point movements in some of these games that we have in the docket today. What do you take away? What are you looking for when you see massive line moves like that overnight?
Yeah, Jensen, you're smart to fire away early because sometimes lines do move significantly in the WNBA, or at least a lot more than we see in the NBA, because those lines are a little bit more sharp from the jump. But in the W, a lot of this movement has to do with injuries. For the Minnesota Lynx, they opened 8.5 point favorites. They're 13 now. Asia Wilson is not playing for the Aces tonight. The same thing for the Seattle Storm. That line has moved. The Sparks have a lot of injuries and players out tonight. So it's basically just injuries that's moved these lines, but there's been significant moves in the one that I don't think has any injuries, or at least that what I've seen, is the Indiana Fever. They moved from 15.5 to 18.5. Ooh. That's the Caitlin Clark effect. That's what I chalk that one up to, because that's a massive move without any injuries.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Kate, let me start in the top two games that you mentioned. I got the Storm for our VSiN Pro subscribers. I got the Storm at -$1.62 yesterday. They're now over a $4 favorite on the money line. So credence to your idea there of just being mindful of how the injury issues can really sway the line. I have the under 163.5 in pocket for the Aces and the Lynx. So let me start there with you. Potential defensive battle here, or just not enough scoring with the injury issues that we'll see present in tonight's matchup?
It's more so the Aces offense and the injury issue with Asia Wilson, but the Aces offense just isn't clicking right now. Since they brought over Jewel Lloyd, they haven't been able to integrate her into that offense well enough. So they're just not fluid on that end. They're still trying to figure things out. And then on the other side for the Lynx, they're going to score, but their defense is third in the league right now. So they're not going to allow a whole lot of scoring. So I think an under there is a great look, especially because this line has moved so much that I think we have some blowout potential. And I always like to take unders when we have blowout potential, because one of the teams is not going to be scoring enough. So I think that's a great look.
You mentioned the Caitlin Clark effect here for the Fever against the Sun tonight. So they were already big favorites, and it goes up even more, as you mentioned, up to 18.5. How do you play these games with Caitlin back now? Because I feel like the public is going to want to bet on Indiana. So hence, if you want to go the other side, you're getting an additional maybe 3 points of value, you would think there. Is that fool's gold? Like, do these become stay away spots? Well, now that she's back, we know the public wants to be on Indiana.
Yeah, you're going to be paying a tax, paying a premium if you want to bet on Indiana. And we've seen that line move significantly. The way I like to attack Indiana, especially with Clark back on the floor, is through a team total, because the Fever's pace, their scoring picks up with Caitlin Clark on the floor. The Fever are second in pace. They're third in offensive rating, fourth in points off turnover, first and second. Like, it just goes on and on and on. And those numbers are significantly different with her off the floor. So with Caitlin Clark on the floor, this Fever team is clicking. Not only Caitlin's scoring obviously adds to that total, but her ability to facilitate and rack up those assists. So I like the first half for the Fever. Their team total over, it just I got it yesterday at 46.5. It's at 47.5. I still think that's a fine number to take it at. And I'm siloing it to the first half because I'm worried about that blowout potential and some of the starters sitting down the stretch and not getting over that full team total of 91.5.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we get a lot of scoring there. I got the over 164 and a half yesterday, Kate. Now, I think upwards of 165 and a half here at DraftKings. The team that just played the Fever in one of the highest rated games we've seen for the WNBA thus far, the Fever and the Liberty. Boy, oh boy, what a comeback for the Fever, and logo threes left, right, and center for Caitlin Clark. Dream and Liberty tonight, they get the slate started. Handicap that one for us. I know the Liberty right now upwards of 8.5, 9-point favorites here against Atlanta as well.
Yeah, this line is moving a little bit against me right now. I got the Dream at 8.5 yesterday. Wish I had the 9 in my pocket. So if you can grab a 9, I would take that. Atlanta opened the season a little undervalued in the marketplace because they had so many new pieces to that squad that I don't think people knew quite what to do with them. They've gelled together really nicely. So I still think that they were a couple days or a couple games away from them being valued properly. So I'm going to continue to capitalize on what I think is a team that's undervalued in the market. The Liberty, I mean, they're a phenomenal basketball team. They're the best team in the league in basically every category, and they're off of a loss. So this is a little bit scary, but the Dream, they're top three in offensive rating, top three in defensive rating. They don't turn the ball over, and that's something that the Liberty thrives off of. They lead the league in points off of turnovers. So as long as Atlanta can make the most of their possessions, not turn the ball over, I think they can stick within this number. Not saying they're going to win outright, but I think they cover, especially I like the plus 9 right now.
Kate, we like to say here, Jensen and I, you can make good money off bad teams, and potentially you could have that scenario tonight with Washington in Chicago taking on the Sky. Road favorites, though, and I'm seeing now 5-point favorites here for the Sticks on the road. What do we make of the Sky getting points at home? Is there any value there? I'm seeing down to 4.5 now here on the road for Washington.
Yeah, Washington money's coming in on them. It moved the line from 3.5 to 4.5. I am so hesitant to back the Chicago Sky. I'm based here in Chicago, and so I hear so many things about that team. I pay close attention to them, and they are just not a good basketball team right now. And the Mystics really aren't much better. So if the books are laying 4.5 for Washington, I tend to think that that might be the right side. But this is a game that I really want nothing to do with because, yeah, the Sky have home court advantage. They could have, you know, a late push. These are such bad basketball teams that when you have a bad team going up against a bad team, I tend to stay off of it. It's when you have that disparity between a really good team and a bad team that maybe the worst team is undervalued in a sense, and you can grab some value there. But this game altogether, I am staying off of this one.
Kate, just a 30,000-foot view for people that are just dipping their foot into the shallow end of WNBA betting. Dave and I look at this similarly in college basketball, where you have two teams with high pace, where one of the spreads gets way out from a live number, and then you can bet the other side in a comeback and have a pretty healthy middle. How many opportunities usually are those present in WNBA live betting? Like, is that a real thing where you'll see a team get out to a pretty sizable double-digit lead, and then all of a sudden the other side finds a way to come back? Is there opportunities that you would recommend people be on the lookout for, and maybe even some that might be present tonight?
Yeah, I think one of those, I mean, it happens all the time. You just have to be paying attention and watching those live lines. But I think the Lynx are a team that if they start slow, they're going to have a great second half. Like you can grab some points there with a team that you know at some point the offense is going to show up. I think another team similar, the Fever are a team like that. The Liberty, some of those good teams, if they have slow starts, and that happens a lot. I mean, if you have a kind of a sleepy schedule spot for one of these teams, they get down 10-12 in the first quarter, they're not going to be down 10-12 through the entire game. Those teams are too good. So that's where you can kind of grab some numbers there and try and middle it. But you just, I mean, similar to any other sport, you just have to be watching those live lines and jump on them as soon as you see some value.
Hey, you mentioned maybe like Atlanta was undervalued in the marketplace here at the beginning of the year. I'm looking at deeper down, taking that big view here at the WNBA championship coming up. And not saying there's an Indiana Pacers team out there, but you could have gotten the Pacers at 30-40 to 1 to win the Eastern Conference with, you know, a couple months ago in the regular season. Is there a team besides the usual suspects, which would be New York and Minnesota, and obviously Las Vegas got to get healthy, in Indiana with Caitlin Clark? Is there another team that maybe there's to extract some value for a long shot play?
Yeah, I mean, the Atlanta Dream are one of those teams for me. I'm worried that I'm getting a little too high on them. So I maybe have to pump the brakes a little bit. But I also think the Phoenix Mercury are a team that no one is really talking about because they're not one of the top four teams in the league right now. But they've been playing really well. New head coach, their roster construction has been actually gelling really well together. And Kalia Copper is their best player. And she just returned to the floor for the first time. Or maybe is making her first return tonight. I'd have to double check on that. But that's to say she has not been playing at all early on in the season. Yeah, just played her first game on Sunday. And so getting her back into the lineup, I think that's going to be a huge boost to this team that you might see the 22-1 on the Phoenix Sun to win the title. Or I'm sorry, Phoenix Mercury to win the title. that number might shorten a little now that Copper is back in that roster.
All right, Kate, last one from me. And we always like to look at some of the future markets, but disclaimer, Dave and I always have trepidation about how the voting goes for some of these player awards. The most competitive, it looks like from an odd standpoint, most improved defensive player of the year, and then also the sixth player of the year award. Anyone that we could kind of take a look at here and say, oh, that might not be a bad ticket to have in pocket?
Natasha Cloud for the Liberty for defensive player of the year. I don't have the number on her in front of me, but she's someone that I would just track and pay close attention to as the season goes on. She's new to the Liberty this year, and she's done a phenomenal job, and she's been a massive part of why they're winning games. So Natasha Cloud
100-1
for the Liberty. What is she?
100-1
100-1 in defensive player of the year market? Oh my God, let's go.
I think Natasha Cloud is someone that you could look at. Yeah, for sure.
100-1 That's going to pique my interest. That's
locking
for sure.
It in.
Okay, appreciate it. I see that Bears helmet over your right shoulder as well. I know you guys are getting ready there in the great city of Chicago for some Bears football talk as well. Great stuff. Again, check out all of her action there at the Better Angle. Give her a follow on X at Kate Constable. When we come back, let's look ahead to what we might see in Sunrise, Florida. Is this the end of the Stanley Cup Finals? We'll discuss next here at VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Enjoyed the conversation with Kate Constable in the last segment talking WNBA. Of course, we're going to talk some NBA finals here with JVT coming up in the next segment and figure out if this one is all but done as they go back to Indiana for game six. Wondering if this is the last hockey game we're going to see until we get to what, October, November for the regular season, if you can believe that, in the Stanley, in the NHL. But the Stanley Cup playoffs could come to an end tonight down in Sunrise, Florida. Numbers interesting. $1.43 here is the money line. Puck line price here, plus $1.68 to the Panthers. That total, Jensen, and again, I mentioned it. I was talking with JD, with Jonathan Davis, does a great job here at VSiN breaking down hockey each and every night. I was like, hey, could we finally get an under on that, you know, bad ice down there in Florida, tight game? And he said, you know, play that at your own risk, essentially. And the vibe that I get is, you know, You can do it. You can certainly go to an underplay if you wanted to here, but you're trying to buck a trend. 5-0 to the over so far in the Stanley Cup Finals. Jensen, I don't know that I'd want to be on that side, especially with the goaltending issues that we're seeing right now for Edmonton. And I don't know what they're going to do, and I'm not going to tell Chris Knobloch who should play between the pipes, because you and I talked about it earlier in the Tyrese Halliburton kind of equivalence, if you will. If a guy's not right mentally, and I'm not saying Stuart Skinner is not, but if he isn't there, I don't know how you could play him in your back against the wall. Season is over if you lose tonight. That's something Chris Knobloch and Pickard and or Skinner have to somehow equivocate to the coach here. What would you do? What do you think they do? I guess it's hard to handicap the game until you really know who's between the pipes tonight for Edmonton.
Sure. I was just playing around with it. If you wanted to involve game six of the NBA Finals, can I interest you in an alternate total goals and an alternate spread? Can I interest you in the under 8.5 alternate total tonight for the Oilers Panthers, and then parlay that with the Pacers plus 8.5? That's $1.16 for the parlay.
Whoa.
But do we have any trepidation whatsoever about anything involving the total for the way this Edmonton and Florida series has played out?
I would be terrified that all of a sudden we just yank whatever goaltender, especially if it's Edmonton and they're behind, and you get three empty netters. You know what I mean? That would be the one fear in a game that has, you know, what does it matter if you lose 5-1 or lose 8-1? Like, that would be my one worry. But again, I look at it and I do figure out this is going to be a really tough decision for Chris Knobloch in this spot, right? Because again, Picker did not look like the guy. It did not look good when you went back north of the border for that all pivotal game number 5. So again, if I make that equivalence to you as a closer, you know, like this, you hate to put it on one guy, but if you're a closer in Major League Baseball, yeah, you've got other guys behind you, eight other guys. But it really is you're the guy with the ball in your hand. If you're Tyrese Halliburton and your head and or your body is not physically up to the task here, then I got to go to TJ McConnell. If Stuart Skinner is not an injury situation here with Stuart, it's just whether or not mentally he's clearly been the better of the two goaltenders. But if you're mentally shot, and I'm not saying he is, but if he is, then I've got no other recourse but to go to Pickard, even though the numbers would say that that's not the better option, correct?
Yeah, I think you're right. I really wonder, you know, what this dynamic looks like in the first period and the body language of Edmonton. And regardless of who's there in goal, I was trying to look and see if there's other ways, other player props or things that would be intriguing. Okay, so if we go with Rachel Dorey's advice,
yep.
How about the under 1.5 in the first period plus $1.14? Do you want anything to do with that?
The only reason I'm nervy is if it's the goaltending. And I'll tell you this: this is fascinating to me, Jensen. This is from Chris Knobloch leading up to this decision, which we still don't know what the decision is. He says, "Quote,
right.
Getting everybody's input." Whether it's the GM, Stan Bowman, his thoughts, Paul Coffey, Justin Schwartz. He goes down a list, a cavalcade of people the head coach is going to talk to before he makes the decision. So, like, I'm sorry, man. I want you to make the decision, Chris Knobloch. Of course, you want to listen to Paul Coffey, Stan Bowman. Yes, these guys have got decades of playing experience, coaching experience, all those things. That's why you're a GM. That's why, you know, Paul Coffey, a legend in the sport. I understand you want to get their input. But at the end of the day, man, any coach in any sport, Jensen, any manager in baseball, it's you got to make that final decision for the player. The buck's got to stop with somebody. So while I appreciate the idea of spreading it out and let's get all this information, and he says this is a process to get to this spot, man, I don't know how I could back the Oilers tonight.
Okay, so with that in mind, are you willing to lay 225 for Florida to score in the first period? Any interest there?
Yeah, I mean, I hate laying over $2 for anything as a cheapskate.
Right? Okay.
But
if
you could get me home to a plus money two-way ticket there, I think they're going to score in the first.
All right. Do you have more faith that Bob continues what he's done in his prowess and you keep Edmonton scoreless in the first period? Edmonton not to score in the first period is plus $1.15. Any interest there?
As we mentioned, the Bobber overnight, it's interesting in the Conn Smythe numbers how shortened they've gotten, right? That Sam Bennett was over $2 betting favorite to win the Conn Smythe yesterday. And in correlation with Jensen's question here, is that the Bobbers come way down to 50 to 1. I know it's 50 to 1. It sounds like an extreme long shot. You could have got triple digits on the Bobber before you went north of the border for game 5. That's been cut in half.
Wow.
Okay? That's a significant move on Bobrovsky. So I think if he pitches a shutout in 1, and let's say he can do this for a game, and let's just say it's a 1, I don't think this is going to happen, but let's just say it's 1-0, and the goal is by Sasha Barkov. Right, it's not by Bennett and or Marchand. It's by somebody that we don't think a 250 to 1 can win the Conn Smythe. Is that really a pathway for the bobber at 50 to 1. Because to me, that's the only way that ticket can cash. Is that not only does he get the shutout in the first period against the Oilers, he gets a complete game shutout. And it's 1-0, and it's not one of the usual suspects that gets that tally. Is that a good enough walk down that primrose path to get a 50 to 1 home with one game potentially left?
I don't know. Right now, for Bob to hit pitch a shutout, it's 10 to 1 for this game. So, oh, man.
I know, right?
Even this, though, and if you want to be more conservative, if you do think Florida just dominates this game, Edmonton team total under 1.5 is 3 to 1.
I don't see it. I still think the Oilers offense is too good. Even in the 5-2 loss, they still got two tallies on the bobber there, even in desperation time, right? So I'm looking at this thing, and I don't want to get in front of an under because I don't know how Edmonton's going to play. Forget about the goaltending for a second. What about the way that they got to stay out of the box. We get that. We saw what happened, the disaster when they went back to Sunrise, and it was like watching Slapshot. They're just in the box every other second, and that is not a recipe for any type of success. So how do they play, Jensen? If you're concerned about giving up penalties, are you playing it closer to the vest to make sure it's 5-on-5 to give your guys, Dreisaitl and McDavid, clearly no disrespect to Bennett, to Marchand, to Sasha Barkov. I think it would take those two as your elite duo when it comes to goal scoring, right? So, like, how do I give those guys a chance to flourish tonight? Is it 5-on-5 or you're hoping Florida takes penalties? I don't see that coming either. They've clearly been the more disciplined of the two squads here throughout the first five games. Like, how does Edmonton play to get that open ice?
Yeah, it's a great point. One other market that I think kind of puts a button or a bow on our points here. Would you be interested in a market on DraftKings team to win from behind?
Ooh.
So obviously you go down and come back to win. Florida right now is +250. Edmonton is +310.
My goodness.
Could you envision a scenario in which Florida goes up 1-0 early and then Edmonton finds a way to win this game?
Well, let's go back to game four. They were down 3-0.
Yes.
And I know Jonathan Davis hopped in at that point. 12-1, I believe, was the ticket that JD got. I mean, who saw that coming? Because I remember thinking, and I didn't say it out loud. I didn't put it into the ether. Oh, Bobber's going to win the Conn Smythe with this pending shutout coming up 3-0, and they're going to go up 3-1. And then the whole thing got flipped on its head with that comeback by Edmonton. And then we saw Dreisaitl for a short time when it was 2-2 go to being the Conn Smythe favorite. So these numbers have been on the move with each and every game. Again, if you believe that Edmonton's live, I'd look to Dreisaitl and Connor McDavid. But again, I'm with you. It kind of feels like it's Florida's night tonight. We'll get to our best bets, by the way, at the end of the program. But up next, JVT, is it going to end in Indianapolis? We're talking NBA Finals next here, VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here as we get ready for, got to wait a couple days here, get to Thursday for Game 6 in Indianapolis as the venue will switch from OKC after their win last night in Game 5. Here to help us break it down, because the co-host of Money Moves with Stormy Bonantoni, the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Give him a follow on X at me, JVT. Jonathan, have you recovered from Omaha first, sir?
Yeah, I have. It was one of those things where it was a very cool experience. Shout out to Rocco's and everybody out there who treated us very well. Our setup was absolutely fantastic. A shout out and a thank you to Derek Stevens for allowing us to come on the trip. It was a very good experience. So I want to make that very clear before I state that when I finally got home on Saturday, it was a very, very nice feeling outside of just the usual stuff, you know, seeing my kids for the first time in 3 days and whatnot. It was a nice feeling to be home.
JVT, I echo your sentiments. I was joking with Dave to sleep in my bed for consecutive nights in the first time in 3 weeks was awesome as well. What will be intriguing, and I know you, me, Mitch, Stormy, Steve Cohen, we're all sitting there watching the end of what game four was going to look like, anticipating what the line to game five was. And here we go, an intriguing finish yet again with the spread involved. Your primary takeaways from what you saw yesterday with OKC now went away from the NBA title.
Yeah, you know, Jensen, for some reason I had to go back and rewatch game four. For some reason my memory on Friday night was very hazy. I can't really remember why. No, you're right. Like, look, I've been kind of constant with this with Stormy, and we've talked about this throughout this series. There has been a constant thread throughout now five games of this series. It has been the Thunder's defense. You know, I think this series is somewhat reminiscent of that Denver series where you looked at it and there were quizzical results. There was a blown game for Oklahoma City in game one, but there was one constant threat. It was that defense was holding Denver down. And this has been now constant in four of the five games that Indiana has played against Oklahoma City. And I think there's one key stat, guys, that really sticks out to me. In the playoff games prior to this series, the Indiana Pacers, off live rebounds in transition, were the best offense in the postseason. They added 2.7 points to their offensive rating through transition off of live rebounds. And their overall offensive rating off live rebounds in transition was 139.5, the best in the NBA. Through five games in this series, that offensive rating has gone from 139.5 to 94.1. They have done nothing in transition off of live rebounds save for one game that was game three. OKC has taken away their best weapon. They are not getting out in transition. They are not efficient off of live rebounds, and they have dominated them defensively in four of the five games that they have played. And Jensen, you asked, like, what's your big takeaway? My big takeaway is, again, that the Thunder can do this defensively. Their offense has been their problem. Their shooting has been their problem. It has not been consistent, but this defense has, and it is going to be the reason why they win this series.
When I look at last night, and again, 120-109, so it goes over, OKC covers all the numbers. And is it as simple, JVT, as saying, all right, Tyrese Halliburton, you can't be 0 of 6 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, nary a field goal, and you only have 4 free throws? I mean, look, it's an 11-point deficit that you lose by, and people can talk about it on talk radio, is he a superstar or not? That is not going to cut it right there if you have any visions of grandeur of Indiana extending the series, at least back to OKC for a game 7. Can he be better, or do you really think this is about that OKC defense and he doesn't have the opportunity to be a potential superstar?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could be better because, like, it's hard to be worse than 0-for-6, right? Like, it's hard to be worse than 4 points. So, like, yes, in theory, he can be better. We know he averaged 18.5 points per game in the regular season. You know, Dave, but I would always posit, like, look, they need him to score more. Obviously, 4 points is not going to cut it. Obviously, only having, what was it? Was it game 2 or game 4, whatever it was? They only, like, 4 or 5 points going into the fourth quarter, whatever game that was, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that needs to be better. But he doesn't need to be a scorer. He needs to have a balance of scoring and facilitating. And last night, the fact that he only had 4 points and coupled with only 6 assists,
right,
that's where it's really going to get you, right? Like, not only is he not scoring, he's also not really creating points for his team. But that does speak to OKC. Look, Halliburton can be better. He can hit some open shots. But the Thunder are great on defense. Look what he has to go through every single possession. It is Lou Dort. And then you work to get Lou Dort switched off of you. Here you go. Here's Cason Wallace. Here's Jalen Williams. Here's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Here's Alex Caruso. There's so many different guys. There's no real weak mismatch to go after. And in playoff basketball, that's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for mismatches. You're hunting those mismatches. There is none on the floor for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think that has played a really big role in why this has been a somewhat muted series for Tyrese Halliburton in the vast majority of the games that they play.
As we look towards game 6 on Thursday, JVT, any particular early player props or any particular guys that you'll be keyed on here before we get to that evening and potentially some early looks for us here in those markets?
Yeah, so I would think just judging by how the market has handled things, if you like Oklahoma City, Jensen, and I kind of do, just sit back and wait. I mean, this thing opened 5. I was texting with Stormy and Brian Ortega, our producer, last night, and I was asking them in the middle of the fourth quarter, hey, what do you think this line would be? My guess was actually like 3.5, and I got talked down to 4.5 because I think the market's going to really factor in this desperation situation for Indiana, right? Elimination game back at home. Market loves those spots. And sure enough, DraftKings opened up 6. We're down to 5. So I think if you like OKC, you might be able to nab that 4.5 by the time we get to game time. Might even get lower by the time we get to Thursday night. But I'm leaning toward OKC. Look, again, they have played consistently on defense throughout this entire series. And what has been odd for this team throughout this postseason is their shooting has been abysmal outside of last night. It's just completely disappeared. They've been wildly inconsistent. They finally have a good shooting night last night. One would assume that, like, at some point water finds its level for this team, and they're going to find their shooting strokes with some consistency. And on offense, you're still not having an answer for Shea, who, again, was very good last night. I think that this is a series in which I know a lot of people like to dunk on people like me who thought this series was going to end in 5. Boys, if they don't blow that game in game one, the series is over in 5. So I think that you're looking at this overall and thinking that OKC, with the control they've shown on defense, by the way, we should note, is Tyrese Haliburton even healthy? Because that was obviously reported last night, right, too. Obviously, we don't think that he's not going to play, but is he 100%? I think they're going to be able to get this thing done. So we'll see what the market does. But if we're going to get to that 4.5-4 range, I think the Thunder would be the play there.
All right, so let's play devil's advocate here, JVT. If you're looking at the other side, Indiana now in the series price is plus 950. But if you want to look for MVP of the series, remember, this is the individual series, Pascal Siakam's 12-1 and Haliburton now is 25-1. Would you rather play a Siakam at 12-1? And if they just win game 6 and get this thing back to OKC and Siakam has a big game back in Indiana, that you can find some value there in some hedgeable spots here. Is that something that maybe intrigues you at 12-1 for Siakam?
Yeah, I think he's nearly lapped Haliburton in terms of MVP for Indiana. I mean, I think you can make a very strong argument. And again, in all of the realities in which this series ends with Indiana winning, this is extremely unlikely. But I tweeted this out with some seriousness yesterday. I think T.J. McConnell has a better case for Finals MVP at this point than Tyrese Haliburton. I mean, he's been brilliant. I mean, you go back to, was it game 3 where he had 5 steals and whatever it was coming off of the bench? Again, last night, that third quarter, he was absolutely brilliant. He has been more effective for stretches than Haliburton has throughout this entire series. And he has been a vital role as to why they are at least very competitive in this series. So to your overall point, Dave, like, yeah, I'd rather have Siakam. Siakam's been brilliant in this series. He's averaging nearly 21 points per game. He's been killing him on the glass with 7.5 rebounds per game. He's averaging 4 assists. And in fact, if you look at it for the series, guys, he's averaging 3.4 steals and blocks. He's been brilliant. So I think, Dave, to your point, if you think that the Indiana Pacers are going to come back here, again, trying to see, hey, where can I play it? Where would I go? To me, taking a piece of Siakam at 12-1 to win Finals MVP, I'd rather do that, because they are not winning this series unless he continues to do what he does. And even if Haliburton finds his level, they're still not doing it without Siakam giving them a baseline of what he has done throughout this series. And because he's so far ahead of him, and by the way, we know the voters respect him enough because they just gave him Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Right. Like, he would be the guy that I would target.
All right, JVT, one pivot to Major League Baseball here. Your Angels, are they for real? 2.5 games out in the wild card race. Dave and I have been talking about it all morning. You just have a conglomerate of teams in the American League up for the 3 wild card spots. Are we buying stock in Ron Washington and company?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, like, I think they show, like, I have over their win total, Jensen, so I think that they're going to be able to eclipse that. I have over 71.5. They should be pretty competitive and push for a 500 record. But, you know, it's funny. So I'm filling in for Adam Burke, and I have the column up for best bets. They're just so heavily, like, they're really relying on the homers. Their pitching isn't particularly great. Over the large sample size, that's not really something that I think is going to be great. But I think they're a plucky group, man. They're fun to watch. They're a lot better than these last few years. And I think they're, at the very least, a contender to go over the win total. But maybe the AL is bad enough that they can get in there. I think they're, what, like 2.5-3 games out right now of a wild card? So I think they're going to go over the win total, but I wouldn't say they make the postseason.
Did not think we'd even been having that conversation in June about the Angels possibly making the postseason. JVT, appreciate it. As always, my friend, we'll catch up again soon.
Good to talk to you guys. See ya.
There he is, Jonathan Von Tobel. Check him out. Money Moves here on the network, 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time. All right, Jensen, when we come back, our best bets, and I got a UFC play for you on a Tuesday before those numbers change before Saturday. That is next. Here is Beast by the Books.
Your You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. Enjoyed that conversation with JVT. Looking ahead to Game 6 Thursday night in Indianapolis. Jensen, what do you make of that very quickly before we get to our official best bets on the day? Because I kind of like that angle of Siakam 12-1 to win the MVP. Not saying that necessarily Indiana can win the last two. But if you can win one, and we're seeing that number come down as OKC's down, and as JVT said, just wait, it might get down as low as 3.5. So that money line price might not be huge for Indiana in Game 6. If they can win that, and Siakam does what Siakam has done, and we're kind of excluding the possibility of Halliburton at 25-1, you could monetize that ticket with a Game 6 win, right? If you're sitting with a Siakam 12-1 MVP, you almost have the double chance, right? If they win a Game 7 in OKC and shock the world, you're probably going to cash that ticket at 12-1. Or you could then hedge off of it with an OKC money line play if you wanted to. Do you think there's some value in that logic?
Sure. And again, that's why I think this is why you and I give our disclaimers on awards markets, because, you know, just of how the voting is, and teach their own. I totally understand if people want to go that way. I'm with JVT, though, on waiting for the best number on the spread. And I could certainly see the public piling in on the Pacers to try and get this thing across the line. So anxious to see when we talk tomorrow, kind of where, if there has been a shift, and then also when we get to Thursday morning, day of, where that number truly lies.
All right, so let's get to it. Our best bets brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And again, nothing yet for Thursday night's game. We do have the all-important game tonight, Game 6, in the Stanley Cup Finals between Florida and Edmonton. And nothing in pocket yet for me. I am leaning back towards that over, Jensen. I have a feeling that's where I'll get to before they do the puck drop tonight. And again, as I referenced with Jonathan Davis here, and again, VSiN Pro subscribers, check out all the information that you're going to get from JD here before the puck drop tonight. But with the goaltending issues that Edmonton's having, I don't know how I get home in an under unless the Bobber pitches a gem tonight, if you will, and really suppresses Edmonton's offense. That's the only way I see this happening, because I think Florida's going to be able to score.
I think so. That was my initial lean, was not only taking Panthers to win, but also sprinkling on that puck line.
Yep.
I think there's something to be said for that first period and kind of looking at the dynamics in the first five. Just, you know, where's Edmonton's body language? What's the confidence? Does it look like, regardless, I think, of who starts in goal. And I think once we get that information, Dave, boy, does that factor into the handicap as well from a psyche standpoint? Like, hey, you know, Stuart Skinner has been pretty much nails from Game 4 and beyond in the postseason series. But if you want to go with Pickard, what does that tell you a lot about that locker room and what they feel overall? So still feel like Florida's the side, obviously staying away from the total. Anxious to see where that puck line price gets to by the time we get later tonight.
You do have an official play again, VSiN Pro subscribers. You already have access to it in Major League Baseball tonight. Going to go back to the M's tonight here against the Sox. What's the way to attack this game?
Yep, we're going to go take a shot on the run line tonight, plus $1.19 at DraftKings at Brian Wu against Walker Buehler. I hate doing this, and I posted it last night. I'm like, all right. Mariners up against Lucas Giolito. They're down 2-0. Bases loaded. 7-8-9 all reach. Bases loaded. Nobody out. Mm. J.P. Crawford strikeout. Julio Rodriguez strikeout. Cal Raleigh, the big Dampa, strikeout. And I turned it off. I said, that'll be that. let's go back to the well, though. Walker Buehler has had a lot of issues just keeping the ball out of the gaps and potentially over the wall here. 7 at the total. Don't want anything to do with that. But I do think the run line, a place to play, a good price there at Circa, plus $1.25. I'm in it on plus $1.19 here on DraftKings. So I think Brian Wu, good guy to limit the Red Sox offense. Particular player props tonight. Mention everything we did in Torpedo Bat Tuesday and the Daily Diamond, which if you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, you have all that at the moment. Any additional ones, Dave? Mention Brandon Lau, 5 straight games scoring a run.
Wow.
Might be a way to attack it tonight if you want a little bit of that Tampa Bay action. And again, we mentioned hottest team in baseball. right now, 19 wins in the last month or so. That would be a way I would look to if you're looking for anything particularly on the player prop angle.
I will tell you this, though. I didn't see that coming last night either, with Giolito and 2-0 shutout win in Seattle. And really, the crime in what you pointed out on X as well is that you flipped it over to the top of the lineup with nobody out.
Yeah.
You get the bottom. That's supposed to be the hard part, right? So you set the table and you get nothing. Oof, that's a tough way to go. We're going to go back to the well here with the M's and lay it on the run line here. I mentioned I do have one UFC play I want to get out here, and these numbers are changing. I played it last night here, William Hill in Nevada. I played Jamal Hill plus $1.25 in the main event coming up Saturday night against Khalil Roundtree. And I was joking with our buddy Reed Kuhn, had Reed on a number of times here in the program. ABC choosing violence. When you look at the co-main and the main event coming up on Saturday night, it's going to be on ABC. That main event, don't blink on that one, because that's Khalil Roundtree is an all-action fighter. If you haven't seen him since he lost to Alex Pereira, go back and watch that fight again, because Roundtree looks spectacular. But Jensen, my worry, and I know that Jamal Hill backers are going to go, well, Jamal just came out of rough and tumble one in a loss to Jiří Prochazka. I still think Jiří Prochazka, those two losses to Pereira aside, is, if he's not the kingpin in the division, he's still that champ in waiting that hasn't been crowned yet. So I don't put a whole lot against Jamal Hill for that loss there. I've faded Jamal Hill against Pereira. I faded him against Prochazka. I'm backing him in this one. Roundtree is a fan favorite, and Jensen, I think that's why he's a betting favorite. I don't think he should be, and I think that number's starting to move where my head's at, towards the Jamal Hill side. So if you can still get plus money, I got him plus $1.25. I would highly recommend playing that today, because I think by the time we get to Friday, on Friday's show, and break this down, I think this could be a pick 'em. So I think you're getting value right now in the number. I think that value might be extracted before we get to Saturday night.
Love it, dude. And again, we are due, man, for one of those four-leg lotto parlays. I've not forgotten about that. We need to get back to it. Perhaps discussions abounding here as we get to Thursday and Friday morning, too.
You've got some WNBA plays that you've got in pocket for tonight. And again, you got the better of a lot of these numbers from yesterday to today.
Yep, the storm, and great to hear from Kate Constable, kind of solidifying what I was thinking. The uncertainty of the Sparks injury issues has really played well into our favor. Gave out to the Storm minus $1.62 on the money line yesterday. It is now minus $3.60, up to about 8-point favorites here. The Storm are on the road in L.A. Also have the under in the Aces and Lynx game. That one at 163.5 is what we got it at. That's now a 161.5 on DraftKings. And so, again, just some of the early data points that were standing out here, that is some really good line movement in our favor. One other one, of course, the Caitlin Clark effect here, right? The Connecticut Sun and the Indiana Fever gave out the over 164.5. Got that at minus $1.08 on FanDuel. Buddy, we are up to 166. And it is climbing at 166.5 right now on DraftKings. So money pouring in on the over. I took a shot. Like, hey, it's WNBA. I took a shot on the Sun at 9-1 on the money line. It's up to 10-1 just in case the craziness happens. We did hit one already with Golden State. The Valkyries got us home at a plus 400 money line price just this past week. So, you know, hey, crazier things have happened. Yeah. I don't see this getting home, but take a shot on it. Don't want any FOMO in that one.
No, you do. That's a good number to take a shot on. By the way, we got a pretty good number for you here. It's a $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and Visa. And all you have to do is open up a GBank Visa signature credit card. And when you do so, in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You're going to get back $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa signature credit card. First Bet is going to give you a $100 deposit match. Then Visa will complete the trifecta with a free Visa Pro subscription through October 31st. That in and of itself is a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank First Bet and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer. It will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Jensen, I'm scrolling through, and I know that Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidwin coming up next year on a numbers game. Maybe it'll break in their show. But we still don't know who the goaltender is tonight in this all-important game number six. In Sports Illustrated, their headline right now, Oilers face impossible goalie decision. That's what they're like. They're like, what do you do, Chris Knaubach? What do you do? Who's your goaltender? By the way, you got to list him at some point so we can wager on this stuff, right? What are we waiting for? How many decisions can you make? We're going to find out who's going to be behind the pipes tonight. Is it Pickett or is it going to be Stuart Skinner? Again, Gil and Kelly coming up next. Jensen, we'll see you tomorrow right back here. It's VSiN by the Books.